whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres now with a chance for McLeod on the break. He'll dish it off for the shot. Scores! Good race down the wing by Quinn, taking the pass from McLeod, and the Sabres get the lead on the road, leading it 1-0. Another stab at it here. That shot is blocked, and a breakaway chance for Quinn. Takes the pass. Quinn right out of the box. Jack Quinn scores! What a shot! Right out of the box and in the back of the net for Jack Quinn, and the Sabres have a 2-0 lead. The Senators turn it over right in front. Cousins scores! Giveaway by the Senators. McLeod right side, 1-on-1. Turns, fires a pass across, scores. Goes off the Ottawa player and into the net. Prime Minister Lukanen here is picked up with a 4-0 shutout against the Ottawa Senators. That is shutout number 2 on the season.
Welcome in. It's the Friday edition of Sabres Live on the heels of a win for Buffalo and not much from the Ottawa Senators, thanks to Lukanen posting the 0 and their offensive woes continuing. Buffalo handing them a 5th loss in the last 6 games overall, while the Sabres improved to 5-2-1 in the last 8. So 8 is the key number here, Marty. There are now exactly 5 8-game segments remaining.
Oh, I like how you're looking
they
at it.
They just completed an 8-game segment going 5-2-1. If they were to replicate that same 8-game segment 5 more times, that will amass them 55 more points, adding to their 37, getting to 92, which may or may not be enough, but it's higher than your projected number yesterday, right?
90 was my projected number, so it's either 5 8-game segments or 8 5-game segments, whichever one you want to look at, you know. And
Marty, and if we did a 5-game segment, the Sabres would be under 500 the last 5, so we're not going to do that.
Point percentage, yes. You know, so yes, you're
5-2-1 in an 8-game segment. Okay,
I'll take the 3 wins that they did against, you know, the Islanders and Chicago and St. Louis to add to that. So I like your thought there. Also, what I did today is I know it's I'm not going to say unlikely because it did happen. But what the St. Louis Blues did during the 18-19 season and being last in the league at New Year's and then going all the way to winning the Stanley Cup, but it's also, were they 3 points out? Were they 15 points out? So I decided to go on basically when the Blues had played their 42nd games, which was on January 10th. They had 42 games played, just like the Sabres have right now. The Blues were 7 points out of a playoff spot. At that moment, their points percentage was 452. The Sabres' point percentage is 440. The Sabres are 7 points out. Like, it has happened. You know, did the Sabres put themselves in a tough spot going winless in 13? Yes, but so did St. Louis that year. So many other teams that have had a tough start to the season and have somehow been able to battle back. So you're right. Going 5-2-1 in the last 8, let's build on those 5 8-game segments and continue at that pace. And the way that they played against the Ottawa Senators for me was even more important. The way Jack Quinn continues now to play with more confidence, with a little bit of an edge, with that shot mentality. The Sabres had 7 grade A chances yesterday. Jack Quinn had 3 of them. Like, he had almost as many grade A chances on his own as Ottawa did. Ottawa only had 4 grade A chances in the game yesterday, and Jack Quinn had 3 of them. That's a good showing. That's a great showing from Jack Quinn, scoring a couple of goals, but, you know, he had another really good chance that didn't go in. But that's what you want from Quinn. That's what you want to see from McLeod, right? Those are the type of games that the supporting group comes through and makes it a dominant performance against a team, Ottawa, that didn't have much yesterday, and that's fine. I'll take that if I'm the Buffalo Sabres.
What is it like as a player when you're looking at the standings and trying to assess your competition, so to speak? Because Buffalo still needs to climb over everybody to get to where they want to get to. And yet Ottawa, who was not very good last night, is still ahead of them in the standings.
Yeah.
And so are the Islanders, and so are the Rangers, and so is this team, and so is this team, and so are the Boston Bruins, who've lost six in a row and seven out of eight. But like, when you're sitting there next to your teammate, is it human nature to just kind of diss on the other teams? Like, oh, they're not that good. Like, we'll catch them.
But you're looking up at them. So you're
I'm wondering what that dynamic is like, because I think it's very easy today to sit here and say, wow, Ottawa's terrible. Like, it's inevitable Buffalo's going to pass them.
Yeah.
But presumably, Ottawa still thinks the same about Buffalo and that they just had an off night. And the Islanders think they're the Kings now, because not the LA Kings, but the Kings, because they've won two in a row.
Brock and Nelson, they went into Vegas and re-emerged. Had a great game.
After scoreless in 17. So you know what I mean here. So I'm just wondering what that dynamic is like as a player. Like, how do you evaluate the teams around you?
You usually always evaluate the team around you and what makes you build on the positive for you. So, yeah, if you're the Sabres, you're looking up and you're saying, well, you know what? The Islanders aren't that good. And the Rangers, well, you know, they're a good team, but they've not been able to put it together, so they're probably going to stay the same. And Detroit, well, no, we're better than Detroit and Montreal and Ottawa. And so you're building you up, right? But the same goes with the Rangers. The Rangers are looking around them, and they're saying, we're way better than those teams. And Detroit is looking around and saying, you know what? Like, we're better than Ottawa, and we are better than Pittsburgh, and we have all these games in hand, so we're going to catch everybody. You always build on the positive. Even though right now the Sabres sit last in the Eastern Conference, I can go in and probably tear down the eight teams that are between them and a playoff spot and say, okay, it's doable. Look, you know, you and I would be in the locker room and I'd be like, man, like, Boston's going to fall out. And Columbus, yeah, they're good at home, but they've not had the same success on the road. And Pittsburgh, yeah, they don't have the goaltending. And Ottawa, well, no Allmark. We just beat them 4-0. I can tear down every single team and then jump on the ice for practice and be like, yeah, we're going to win the next 10 in a row. Like, that's how we're going to do it. That's why I always go back to the players always – the next day after a win or a loss, you're always looking at the positive. How do we move forward? How do we get... As a fan, you often ride the roller coaster a lot worse than the players because you don't have any control into it. But I'm telling you, the players all think that this is definitely doable, and get on the run and you're right back in it.
Luukkonen spoke of it being a game that they haven't had enough of this year. So what do you think that means in front of him moving forward with Seattle tomorrow afternoon at 4? And then next week you have Carolina on Wednesday. So please note the major gap in the schedule. That is a pretty extended period of time without action. Yeah. Saturday afternoon going all the way to Wednesday. And then they play again Friday after that on home ice before embarking for a rather condensed Western trip, which is 4 games in just under 6 days.
Yeah. For Luukkonen last night, that's the perfect game. And I know it's a shutout, so it is the perfect game. But that reminds me a lot of back in the days playing in Carolina and knowing you're going to get 35, 36, 38 shots against. And, you know, like, it just, you get a shutout and it feels good because the numbers look really good. At the end of the night, the Ottawa Senators only had 4 grade A chance. One was Brady Tkachuk's deflection. One was Artem Zub on the back door. One was the Tim Stützle coming in and then the Pinto breakaway. Those were the 4. I mean, as a goaltender, I'd take those 4 chances any day of the week and say I can make those saves. It's not a tic-tac-toe backdoor double rebound deflection. I'm scrambling and it's in the back of the net. I felt like this was a perfect game. But he was the perfect goalie for that game yesterday. The puck was sticking to him. Even though the Ottawa Senators got 35 shots, the amount of rebounds opportunity they didn't get was the reason why I felt like Luukkonen played so well. And yes, there was some stronger defensive play in front of him. I pointed out Owen Power coming down two-hand, hard, hack, boom, in front of the net and being hard on the loose puck and great, but This was the perfect game for a goalie, man. That's why he says, I want to have more of those games. I want to have 35 shots against and only four grade A chance and have my goal save above expectation, my save percentage, everything go up. I know it's not always about the numbers. The biggest number is wins, but this, for a goalie, that feels good. It feels really good.
Well, what do you see in what they're up against with Seattle, a team that obviously comes in after losing game one of their five-game trip last night against Columbus? They ended up allowing six, including a probably ill-fated empty netter to make it 6-2. Obviously, Dan Bylsma not concerned about the race for the Jennings.
Jennings, yeah, no. I mean, pulling your goalie, and then it's 5-2, and this was with 29 seconds left.
Yeah.
It's like you're going to get three goals in 29 seconds. Like, okay, I get you're trying things. You're probably working on stuff, but that was a weird pull of the goalie at 5-2 and trying to push late in the last 30 seconds. Here's the thing with the Seattle Kraken. I understand Seattle does have some good players. I think Matty Berniers is a good player. I think they've got Vince Dunn on the back end that I think is really good. They do have some good players. They don't have a lot of depth. They don't have a lot of support for those guys. Like Kaapo Kakko just got acquired from the New York Rangers. He's playing top line. Like that's just not the quality in the roster that you would want. But any given night, you know, like your bottom, your Mitchell Stevens and Brandon Tanev can come through, and all of a sudden, you know, you're behind the eight ball, and you gotta, you know, try to battle back, and you run into a hot goalie. That can happen. But when I look at the Seattle Kraken, unfortunately, I don't think I look at a team that has enough, kind of like Ottawa yesterday on their back end. I said Ottawa's back end was one you had to take advantage of. And I think the Sabres did take advantage of their defense. Nick Jensen's turnover. Like, you know, you took advantage of the defense. Thomas Chabot turnover. Benson gets it, boom, to McLeod, to Quinn, goal. Like, I think you can do the same thing with the Seattle Kraken.
I think their defense is their strength.
It's better, that's, but you got to take advantage of their forwards now. That's what I'm saying. Sorry, I guess I didn't explain it good. Like I don't like the group of forward in Seattle. You got to take advantage of their forwards. You got to make sure that, you know, you don't give them any freebies. That's the key here. I don't think Seattle has the offense to be able to say, hey, we're going to go toe-to-toe with you. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, I think from a Seattle standpoint, obviously their defense corps is one of the higher scoring in the NHL. But I feel like they have a lot of similar players, and the similarity, unfortunately for them, has played out statistically. That is to say, few, if any, of their forwards are trending towards career years.
Yes.
If anything, all of them, almost all of them, are below where management and coaching would have thought they could be. And you can go through the list. Like Jared McCann's probably going to lead the team in scoring. But is he close to the 40-goal year from a couple of years ago? No. Might he get close to 30? Yeah, that's fine. But it doesn't help when Chandler Stephenson's only going to score a dozen at most. He's got five right now. And people say, oh my gosh, what a terrible signing. Well, he's got 27 points halfway through the year. So that projects to 54. And if you were doing an honest evaluation of Stephenson, he's a 50-point player.
Yeah.
Period. Like, he had two seasons above 60 with Vegas, like all-world stacked Vegas, of which he was a huge part of. But when he signed that deal, I wasn't thinking Stevenson's going to continue being a 60-point guy. He's a 50-point guy. So, and go through the list, like the Bjorkstrands and the Schwartz and Beniers, and, like, at least Shane Wright has shown well in the last 20 games. He's gotten into his first offensive rhythm of his young NHL career. But the Tolvanen, the boards, and Burakovsky's, like, they all feel like the same player to me right now.
Seattle reminds me a lot of, look, and that was a dead puck era, like 2001, 2002 Sabres, where we had Miro Chatan leading our team with 65 points at the end of the year in 82 games. And you're like, oh, good, you're leading the team. But you have 63 quarter of a point per game. That's what it is. Jared McCann is at 0.71 points per game, not even at 0.75 points per game. He's got 30. If at the end of the season you just double that, he would lead the team with 60 points. I mean, that's it's not enough offense. You'd have to have 20 players at 60 points to say we have balanced offense and we're good. Like, you need players to be 75, 80 points, 90 points to be able to get that step forward. And Seattle doesn't have that right now.
No, as mentioned, they are third in goals by defense, but they don't have as prolific offensive production points-wise as Buffalo does, but they do have 25 goals from their blue line. So, worth noting,
Montour has been, okay for them, so that helps.
No, I think he's been fine, and Dunn's been excellent after coming back from injury. So, again,
Montour's got eight, Dunn's got eight. Like, I mean, that's what you're looking at right now. Like,
those are good numbers for half a season for any defenseman.
Great number. Dunn is almost a point of game, really, but he's missed half a year.
Keep in mind, Buffalo has one win all time against the Seattle Kraken, so we'll see how it plays out tomorrow as Buffalo looks to get back in the win column. And it's Kids Takeover Day, so we want you to join us and all the kids on this Saturday afternoon as Buffalo and Seattle clash. Young fans taking over roles like junior reporter, junior PA announcer, and first 5,000 kids will take home a jersey lunchbox. All you got to do is visit sabres.com/tickets to purchase yours today. Bandits are home tonight. They get Toronto. The Amerks are home tonight as well, looking to continue their winning ways as part of a 2-2 weekend. Head coach Michael Leone is with us. I would love to say all-star coach Michael Leone, but Michael, you waited like an extra week to get your point percentage at number one in the division. So unfortunate to say the least, but I was still tip the cap for this amazing run your team is on.
I actually told Jason Karmanos I was happy because I can go home and be with my family. To be honest with you, I'm glad we're in first now percentage wise. But at the time, I was like, if they just could hold on, I'll be able to get home.
Well, I would have taken your spot. I'll go to Coachella Valley for a nice 3-day vacation. I'll pretend to be you, but I don't think I can do that because I'm not a very good coach. But what has been the difference in the last month for your team and for you behind the bench to say, hey, we've been able to take that step forward?
Good question. I think early in the season, the things we wanted to talk about or that I wanted to bring our identity was to play smart, hard, and fast. I thought we were playing hard. I thought we were playing fast, but we weren't playing smart. There's a lot of times in games where, you know, if you look back at the end of the game, we heavily outplayed a team 5-on-5, but there would be a 2-3 window where we would not manage situations properly. And at this level, that could be the difference. And I think it was a little bit of us probably being young and immature. And and during this stretch we're on, our guys have played a lot of winning hockey and understanding those times of the game. Maybe it's an extended D zone shift and we find a way to get out of that shift where they don't score or a play where we take a hit to make a play at the end of a shift and we get a deep and we get new guys out there. We've been really good away from the puck. And I credit the guys to buy into playing winning hockey. And even, I look at the Bridgeport game where we're on a back-to-back, they're sitting there. We probably weren't at our best, but in the third period, we locked it down in the key moments of the game, blocks, situational play. And, the group is in a great spot and we just have to continue to keep getting better. And I still think there's areas of our game where we can improve.
The group is constantly changing, evolving, as is the nature of pro sports. You have Kozak currently up with the Sabres. You have Hellenius. What's his status? Because he and Wahlberg are back. Wahlberg in tonight, but not Hellenius?
Yeah, so we... So the decision behind that, I think looking back from, sports science and Michael and the team there, I think a year ago, Yuri Kulik went through a lot going World Juniors, 7 games in 11 days. And those kids didn't get a Christmas break. So we thought it would be really good idea to give them a couple days off. They didn't start skating till Thursday. And then just with the load management and looking at are scheduled this month, just playing games on the weekend. They're each going to split a game this weekend to kind of get back into it. And then I thought it was a really good idea. We talked about it on the bus ride home with our trainers and strength and conditioning coach, Nick Craven, and just an area where they thought last year they could have managed Jiri a little differently. Just with the, I think he probably played over 90 games last year and, had a tough time after that getting going because it's a lot. So we want to put those guys in the best position to be successful, you know, down the road when it matters the most. So we came up with that plan. They're each going to play a game this weekend.
Isak Rosén, he went through a stretch where he didn't have any points in five games, and now he's got 13 in the last 10. Obviously, the Sabres fans here in Buffalo are looking at the prospect. We talked about Delanius a lot during the World Juniors, Wahlberg a lot, other prospect with Team USA and Sturback with Slovakia. But what about Rosén? What makes him now like an all-star at the AHL and so good over the last 10 games?
Yeah, I think Rosie during that stretch when he was struggling, I think he was still, you know, when you look at the volume of shots that he had or the scoring chances that he had, it just wasn't going back of the net. And I think some of that plays into power play as well. You get power plays early in the game, those top guys start feeling it and it helps their 5-on-5 games. But he can really skate. His ability to make plays, he's got a really good shot. I think he's grown a lot in his wall play on breakouts, making the next play for us to get out of our zone, and he's a threat every single time he's on the ice. And you look at his numbers this year, hopefully he can keep pace, but you're looking at a 30-goal scorer, and he's done a great job for us. And scoring at key moments of the game, I think that's part of your development too, where you're a guy now, it's just your third year in the league of, you know, when maybe we're struggling a bit, he has the ability to make a play and change a game. So he's been fantastic for us.
Newly acquired Jagger Joshua going to make his Amerks debut tonight?
Yeah, he'll be in the lineup tonight. So we're excited to see him.
And what, in your words, does he bring? And also, you know, how are you managing Kisikov? He's hardly played, and yet when he comes in, he seems like he's been impactful. How do we?
Yeah, no, it's. I think that's the one biggest thing that I've learned, especially at this level, is just managing situations and players. And even I look at Fiedler Schultz, who didn't play 14 games, and he, I think he has 8 goals in 14 games. And we've been very fortunate. It's a good problem to have, the depth where you're having hard conversations with players that might not be in the lineup that are playing really well. And Keese, earned the right to go in, and he made 2 big-time plays that ultimately led to us getting the win, and he'll be in the lineup again tonight. And I credit the players too, because, you know, when things are rolling well, it's tough to take guys out of the lineup that have played really well. And there was an opportunity for him to get in, and I thought he did a great job. And we've been very fortunate this year. Sometimes when I think we maybe have had our lineup 5 or 6 times all year, where when maybe you don't have everybody in the lineup, but guys are put in situations, and it's been really nice as a coach that we could play 4 lines on any given night. And we would trust all of them. And I don't particularly worry about matchups, to be honest with you. We roll guys. There's some guys that get more O-zone starts than D-zone starts, but our ability to have different guys in and out of lineup, and then when there's their numbers called, they've not just played well, but produced.
Yeah, and another guy that is an all-star that produced well is Devon Levi. Now, I get asked all the time around Buffalo, like, oh, do you think the Sabres will call up Levi before the end of the season? And what's the, you know, and so I know it's way above our pay grade, like those decisions, but you got to be happy to know that Levi's playing well. And you, selfishly, you probably want him to be able to experience that whole season in Rochester and the playoffs and everything for you, but also for him.
Yeah, no, it's, selfishly, yeah, you want him all the time because he's playing great. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen. But I think it's, for a goalie, a young goalie, I think for him, coming down, great attitude, work ethic is off the charts, and his ability to play. When we went through that stretch where we had 16 and 28 days, and he's playing two games in 3 days, I look at the Belleville game as an example. We play in Lavelle, plays great. Long drive, we play Friday, Saturday, and his ability to play that Saturday game where he's maybe not at his best, but he finds a way to win the hockey game. And I think that's really good for his development, where he's playing games on back-to-back nights to, carry the mail. And he's done a fantastic job. Like, I seen a lot of growth in his game, his ability to make timely saves when it matters the most, where, you know, you want to play perfect as a coach, but you're not going to play perfect and you're going to give up stuff sometimes, and he's done a great job of making that save when it matters the most. And he's done a great job for us. I credit the group too. We've done a really good job committing to the right side of the puck. And I think we're giving up 25 or 26 shots a game. And it's always nice when the goalie's in the not seeing that much. And we know if we're giving up that many, Dev's going to stop a lot of them. And he's done a great job for us. And then Sandy has done really well. His last three starts have been great coming in. And they got real good chemistry. It's been awesome.
Noah Ostlund, if you can, try to put into words what he has done this year, because Sabre fans would look at him as a prospect and see one goal in 12 games. But I would say if you looked at him more like a starting pitcher in baseball, his win-loss record is pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's given up less than two earned runs and five hits a game. Like, I've been fortunate to, you look at the World Junior group, the 05 group, I coached those kids at the national program. Logan Cooley's go down the list of players that have played at the national program. And I don't say this like, he's probably, his play away from the puck, he's probably the best center I've seen play the game. Like, his ability to kill plays in his own zone, his second and third efforts. I told him the other day, you could cheat a little bit for it's just not in his, almost like a Patrice Bergeron type of player, where he's on the right side of the puck. You trust him in late game situations. He's one of our best killers. And the thing is too, he's getting the amount of plays that he makes. I mean, you could easily say he could have a point a game right now, and he's getting grade A scoring chances, you know, 2 to 3. But I look at the stretch he was out, and credit to him and his work ethic and the type of person he is. He gained 7 or 8 pounds. I think he's up to 100, and he's stronger. He's winning a lot of puck battles. He reverse hits guys, and he makes hits to make plays. He's an outstanding hockey player, and when he's in the lineup, he helps us big time. And I know when you look at the points, it's kind of crazy, but as a coach, you trust him, and he's a hell of a player, and he's going to be a hell of a player.
We have to go to break quickly, but Team USA wins the World Juniors. You've also obviously been through the Team USA ADM, model and everything. Do you think a lot of other, and I look at Canada, but it's not that it's crazy, but do you think they have to kind of look at what USA has been able to do over the last few years and in their development of players?
Yeah, no, I think when you look at what, I guess 15 years ago, they weren't where they're at now. And now they're arguably the top in junior hockey right now. And you just look at the players, and I do think being in that building, the strength and conditioning and what the kids turn from their 17 to 18 years old. And you look at guys like Ryan Leonard, just physically power, and they've done an unbelievable job. And I do think I think it's a great model. Obviously I'm biased, but I think if you look at the athletes that have come out of the national program, not just the national program, but in the USHL, Trevor Connolly, who was on the team, Kleber, some other guys that were national team players, but it's been working, and I think it's a great model to have for people to develop.
Your approach is working fantastically for the Amerks. Michael, thank you so much for the time. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks. Marty, I'm big on shot volume, too. I was listening to you last night.
Yeah, okay, good. I like that. Quality and quantity, both of them.
And smart hockey players. Yes, we love that, too, Michael.
I'm a big shot volume guy, so I'm
like, I like it.
Thank you very much. Michael Leone, head coach of the Amerks. We've got Comets and Amerks tonight at Blue Cross Arena. And, of course, the Amerks are on the road tomorrow. The Sabres are home tomorrow. The Bandits are home tonight. It's Friday, which means Shayna Goldman is coming up next right here on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
The only thing that you can predict on this show, I say this with pretty significant confidence, is that Shayna Goldman's going to join us on Fridays. Now, there have been throughout the week cameos over the course of this season, but we do love our Friday Shayna Goldman segment. Hi, Shayna. How are you?
I'm good. I thought you were going to be like, there's one thing you can predict, and it's whatever is going to come out of her mouth. Like, I thought we were going in a different direction. I'm like, Shayna, oh, no, what did I do?
I'm treading
cautiously. I dropped a bad word last week. I did it. Anybody can do it. That's the problem.
It was pretty amazing. It was, as you would expect, Shayna, it was like the most innocent Marty-ism of all time. Like, he's just recounting, you know, days gone by, and all of a sudden this S-bomb drops out, and we're like, oh, well, that was kind of interesting.
I was going to ask, what word did we go with? That is personally my favorite. So, good choice.
Yeah, yes. It was good. It was good. Well, Marty's fixated on your assessment of the Eastern Conference right now. Mm-hmm. So, after a whole bunch of those teams that are trying to get into the playoffs had good nights last night, Ottawa notwithstanding, what do we make of this race now that is basically into the second half?
I mean, it's exciting that there is a race in the first place because the West feels a little bit more decided. And it was similar last year, too. The problem is, like, while Montreal's run right now is super fun and exciting because it's like, wow, this up-and-coming team, the Blue Jackets, they're one of the best stories in the league in a lot of cases. They have these opportunities because everyone around them sucks so much. And while, you know, it's nice that we're going to have some interesting, you know, it's going to be really interesting come the deadline, too, because some of these teams are on a bigger journey that they might not be buyers, like the Flyers, who took themselves out of position to stay with the process. And I think we might see that from some teams if they're still here come March. But it still feels like so many teams don't want this spot and they're taking the fun out of this race.
Oh, I'm having a lot of fun with it. So, I mean, that's just me. But, okay, so if we had to power rank some of those teams, because those teams suck so much, as you just said, like the Bruins would be at the bottom, right? Like, they're terrible. And
can we have this segment sponsored by a vacuum company, please? Yes.
Oh, my Dyson. God, that would be perfect.
Dyson will sponsor our suck-o-meter. Let's just call it that way.
There but we'll we go. Beautiful. We're getting vacuums and blow dryers for all. Let's go.
Absolutely. So, you know, my daughter's got the whole Dyson thing at Christmas, like the hair dryer and the thing. So anyway,
I bought the Shark. I get it.
Yeah. So, okay. So Boston's awful. Columbus is not so bad. You know, Ottawa, no Allmark. Montreal, Detroit, whatever. Islanders, Flyers. Is Buffalo, like, if you had to do a power ranking of the teams that suck so much, would you think Buffalo is a team that, oh, well, they do have some talent, and if it wasn't for 13-game winless streak, they'd be up there. Would you put them a little higher?
Good question. Would I put Buffalo higher? It's really hard to say because they're so inconsistent, and I feel like it's hard to ignore that 13-game losing streak, even though they've been a lot better since. Because I look at the Senators and go, well, if they had Linus Ullmark right now, I would feel a lot better about them, right? Because the defense is much better. The offense in the early goings was good. It's really trailed off lately. But, I mean, it's hard to say because I think we know the Sabres are better than what their record shows. They're better than that 13-game win streak. But I'm not seeing it consistently enough from certain guys to be completely sold on them just yet. Like, I want to see Rasmus Dahlin taking over games more often. I want to see Dylan Cousins thriving in transition. I want to see Paterka back to those early season levels, and he's getting better. But it's just, I'm missing a little bit. And then the Jason Zucker injury, like, I'm challenged a little there.
Well, good news was Zucker came back last night, so that's important, but never easy to stomach in the moment, obviously. Who's more real among the teams that are surging right now? Montreal, 8 wins in 10. Detroit, 5 wins in a row. Dare I say the Rangers, 3-1-1 in their last 5. So, you know, like, where are we? And not that long ago, we spoke in broad NHL terms with a couple of teams averaging over 4 goals per game. The new highest scoring team in the league is Tampa at only 3.69. So that has come way down. Yet Columbus is at 4.18 on home ice. They are like lapping the field at Nationwide. So what do we make of all this?
Columbus is an interesting one because they've ranked really highly in their goals per 60 throughout the year. At 5-5, they were second in the league in the early going of the season. The expected goal generation just fell short, and their shooting percentage was so high, so I was a little bit worried about the sustainability. And I feel like their levels kind of balanced out in the way that you would want to see that they were able to keep this up. The Sean Monahan injury is, you know, the big hurdle in all of that because he has been one of the best stories of the year. He's been outstanding between Marchenko and whoever they've thrown on the left there. Now it's Vorokhanov, and like it's working for them. But I'm excited to see how Fantilli looks, but I'm a little bit worried about that long-term sustainability without him there because I think he's been a really important part of it. But like Zach Werenski's playing at the level of a Norris caliber defenseman. Like I think that there is more to like in Columbus than maybe we all expected, but it might just be because, you know, we didn't see this team having this trajectory, right? Like none of us saw this coming. And with Montreal, you see the progress and you go, well, that's nice. You thought they'd be better this year, but maybe not good enough to be taking out legitimately good teams. I'm not totally sold on them yet, to be honest. I think that I need to see a little bit more at 5-on-5, and the goaltending's been a bit inconsistent. Sam Montembeau, I think, is better than his last stretch of play. So I'm not sold on them. But then, you know, you mentioned the veteran teams. The Rangers have a lot of work to do. They have the difference is the Rangers have that elite talent that can flip a switch and turn it on and turn things around, but it's not happening consistently enough that I'm not sold on them either.
Okay. Your Mika the dog almost was traded to the Vancouver Canucks. I was worried about you and knowing that maybe that was going to happen. This or that, if you were a team in the National Hockey League, would you be looking for JT Miller or Elias Pettersson? Which one would you want? And I'm not trading your dog. I don't want him to go anywhere, but Mika Zibanejad was apparently offered to the Vancouver Canucks for JT Miller. So I'm saying, who do you like better, Miller or Pettersson?
It's fine. I didn't name her, so it's not my problem. Okay, I gave up the name just to get her, so, you know.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a cute name regardless. But I would say if I'm an acquiring team, every single day of the week, without question, I am going after Elias Pettersson. Okay. I do not care that JT Miller is North American and brash, and he brings the energy, and he scores a ton on the power play, and he can bring that playoff scoring that obviously we weren't seeing from Pettersson last year. I understand all of that. But this whole situation to me, you look at Pettersson and you have someone that is a franchise cornerstone. When the offense isn't popping, at least the defense is very good. That's someone who could win a Selke trophy and who could someday be in the Hart trophy race. To me, JT Miller, when you consider the age, the contract, the inconsistency, I don't know, maybe some of the defensive setbacks we've seen this year. It's giving 2 years ago. Do you remember all of those 6-on-5 goals that, you know, they were trying to catch up in a game and JT Miller's making bad defensive plays, or they're defending the 6-on-5 and he's out there and you're just seeing like a total lack of effort on these game-changing plays and the Canucks are losing games as a result? Like, we're getting back to those levels. So I would not be going after him.
Just quickly, JT Miller has 12 playoff goals and 91 playoff games. And I know a lot of those games were Rangers and Tampa, and maybe he wasn't playing as high in the lineup. But in 30 playoff games with the Vancouver Canucks, he has 9 goals. Like, over a full season, that's 20 to 25 goals. Like, it's not a very high rate of goals for playoff performance if you think that he would be able to give you playoff performances that you need to win a cup. Like, I like JT Miller. I think he's a good player, but I'm with you. Elias Pettersson all the way, in my opinion. That's the way I look at it.
And the other part of it, too, is you look at last year, right? Like, they brought in a center because they weren't sure he could stay at center and be their 2C. obviously, you know, Lindholm didn't work out the way they expected. He was injured. He was good as a 3C. And JT Miller brought his game up a lot on both ends of the ice with Brock Besser. They were killing it, right? At 5-on-5, they were barely on the ice for any goals against after they brought in Lindholm. But that hasn't been the consistent, like, theme throughout his career. Like, there was a reason they acquired someone to be their 2C instead of Miller.
Any concerns about the Devils right now?
I mean, if you lose to the Rangers like that, I mean, they got to be down bad when they generally dominate the Rangers. It's interesting because in December, you look at it, and they were one of the best defensive teams in the entire league. They had a stretch of, I think it was like 8 of 9 games where they only allowed 20 shots on goals or less. And the one game that they allowed more was 24 to the Avalanche. And then they go back-to-back against the Canes. And I thought, like, hey, it's just the Canes. Don't worry about it. But that theme is continuing on right now. The lucky part is, Markstrom is bringing it when he had some struggles earlier in the season, but I think that they need a little bit more from their offense right now, and I think you're starting to see a couple holes in the top six on the wings because Mercer has been a third line staple and isn't making the case to play higher. So I think that's one part of it, but two, I wonder if they're going to start shifting around their D pairs. I know they were so good and so consistent earlier in the season, but like it seems like they need to just get back to that like stabilizing game that they had last month and earlier this year.
Seattle Kraken are in Buffalo tomorrow, 4 p.m. I'm thankful for Duffer reminding me it's a 4 p.m. game. I thought it was a 1 or a 7, so it's a 4. So it's the way it is. So 3:30, we're on the air with a pregame. What do we expect from Seattle? Not a lot of consistent offense, but who are the players to watch and how do you beat them?
So Joey Decord is one to watch because I think Grubauer has, you know, been inconsistent at best in goals. So a healthy Decord is a good thing for the Kraken because he was very good before he was sidelined with injury. I think the one thing to keep in mind is like this is a team that they've been good with these like surprising comeback wins, including against, I think it was the Canucks already twice this year. So that's one thing to go off of. But like the power play scoring isn't where it should be. The 5-on-5 scoring still lacks a bit. But you're seeing that top line get together in a way that you were hoping to see for a while, right? If you're a Kraken fan, like you wanted to see them have a true top line. It feels like Kako, Beniers, and Schwartz have been that. So at least they have like a better consistent threat there. And then I think if you give them true first line minutes, then everybody else gets a little bit less, which might be fitting for this lineup. But yeah, like I wouldn't say they're the biggest offensive threat in the league.
Final minute of play. Does Boston make big changes again?
No. I think management made their big change to try to save themselves, even though they were the problem all along. While I agree, Montgomery, I think, wore out his welcome in Boston. You're seeing now the fundamental issues that were behind that all along, which was management and the team building. And let's see what they do down the middle, because I think that's still a legitimate issue.
Could they do a double coaching switch in the season? Could they see like, hey, we may need to go and get ahead of the everybody else that may do coaching changes and get somebody else before the season's over?
I would be shocked if they did, but I mean, who knows, right? The average tenure in the NHL is below 2.3 years right now, if I remember correctly. Like, it's ever-changing among those 32 coaches. Like, it keeps going down, but I think that they try to make some roster changes first.
Thank you. Never change, Shayna.
Wow. Thanks for having me.
All right. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. She'll be back next week, and we're back right after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Hope to see you in Bandit Land tonight, Marty.
Won't be there. I'm actually going to Toronto tonight, but I'll put it on my computer.
Boo.
I'll put it on the computer. So go Bandit. Let's go Bandits. yes, I think it's going to be great. Oh, quickly, I know that we're getting updates from Lindy Ruff. Matthias Samuelsson's still sick, probably not playing tomorrow. Beck Malenstein is just working his way back. I don't think Lindy Ruff changes his lineup. I think he goes back to 11-7. Look, we talked about what Dennis Gilbert did, and then you have Jacob Bryson drew a penalty on the Cousins elbowing. I thought the 7D played well together. The 11 forwards had good rhythms. I don't see how you change that lineup to go back to 12-6 or try to fit somebody who's not 100%.
I would probably agree with that.
Way to finish the week, right? With an agreement here on Sabres Live. Way to go.
Mutual.
You want me to agreement? Do that? Yeah. Ooh, yeah. We agree on things.
No, I fully expect you to emulate Darren Dreger right now.
As we want my money and I want it now. Give it to me now. Let's go.
Well,
I think Dreger should have driven to Buffalo to get his check.
The league said that to Nick Cousins after his elbow on Bryson last night. He got fined for it. Have a great weekend, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.